I told you, it is time to remember everything. It had not been his own fear speaking, but his father.
He is coming, Xinyan shouted.
Why? Magnus shouted at her. No one's done any sacrificing yet.
I come because my followers wish it, said the voice. The way is open enough for me.
There was a terrible thickness in the air, the feeling of a dank breath that froze the veins. It was a ripple of agitation that made Magnus want to run somewhere, anywhere to get away, but his body would not let him move. Some animal instinct deep inside him knew there was nowhere to run that would be safe. The approach of a greater demon, empowered by the adoration of so many worshippers, filled every sense, destroyed every other feeling, until only horror remained. Above the pentagram, the static was resolving into a shape.
Chapter 27, Forged in Fire.
Alec understood that they were badly outnumbered. Every soul sitting in the amphitheater, and there were many, had turned to face them. Quite a few had already risen to their feet and were reaching for weapons, clubs and staffs mostly, though he saw several blades flash in the light.
Wow, there are a lot of cultists, Aline muttered. They must have carpooled.
Helen's quick smile dimmed when two cultists grabbed her arm. Aline elbowed one in the throat and Helen headbutted the other in the chest. A fool charged at Alec and was summarily punched in the face. He lost sight of Magnus, faced with a wall of clawing hands and kicking feet. The only way to Magnus was through them.
Ladies, said Alec, shall we?
Gladly, Helen murmured sweetly and kicked a man in the kneecap. Alec dodged a badly thrown punch and returned it with a well-thrown one. In the pauses between brawling, Alec shot his bow at demonic shapes wheeling in the sky. He could keep this up all day. He only knew how to move in one direction, toward the stage, toward Magnus. Nothing mattered until he reached Magnus. He could see Magnus in gaps between the crowd. He was standing on stage as though he'd been addressing the assembly. Xinyan was next to him, shouting and waving her arms, thankfully not participating yet in the battle. Magnus turned halfway. There was blood on Magnus's throat and his shirt, and a dark bruise on his face. Alec's heart wrenched. Then Magnus caught his eye. There was one of those brief moments of battle stillness, like the eye of a hurricane, where time felt stretched thin. Magnus seemed so close, as if Alec could reach out and touch him, gentle his bruises, stand between him and the crowd. He remembered running to Magnus's Brooklyn brownstone one day. They had just started dating. There had been so much going on then in the world and inside Alec. The war was beginning, and Alec could not work out the mess of rage and confusion and longing in his own heart. He'd known Magnus only a couple of weeks. It did not make any sense that he was seizing this chance to see him when his family thought he was training, when his lies could be discovered at any moment. He was so afraid all the time, and he felt so alone in his fear. Alec already had a key. Magnus had explained it was easier for him, and he had enough wards on the apartment to know if anyone other than Alec entered with that key. Alec had run in, heart beating too fast. He'd seen Magnus in the center of his loft, absorbed and intent on his work. He was wearing an orange silk shirt and flipping through three spell books at once, turning pages with two ringed hands and a flurry of blue sparks. There was a pit of dread in Alec's stomach at the thought of what his father would think if he knew Alec was here. Then Magnus had looked up from his spell books, seen him, and smiled. And Alec's heart had stopped its frantic pounding, like a prisoner desperate to escape. Alec thought he could be all right just standing in that doorway, watching Magnus smiling to see him for the rest of his life. Magnus smiled the same way now. Despite the horror unfolding around them, the corners of his golden eyes crinkling. It was such a sweet, surprised smile, as if Magnus was startled enough and happy enough to see Alec that he had forgotten everything else. Alec almost felt like he could smile back, Then Helen shouted,
Shinigami demons!
The Crimson Hand was not messing around. Of all flying demons, Shinigami were among the worst. With their leering, shark-like jaws and vast, untidy black wings, Shinigami demons took pleasure in ripping people's faces off and crunching their bones into powder. A shadow fell on Alec. He looked up into a grinning maw crowded with teeth and loosed an arrow. The first Shinigami narrowly avoided the arrow and dove straight for the shadow hunters. Several more of the large creatures followed close behind. A second arrow knocked the closest Shinigami out of the air, sending it careening into the seats, and then the rest of the demons were upon them. The closest one landed on the steps with a heavy thud. Aline darted in and slashed it with her seraph blades, carving deep gouges into its chest. It roared and swept her away with its wing, knocking her off her feet. The Shinigami reared up, towering above her, its wings repelled starlight, outlining a jagged black hole against the night. Another of the Shinigami demons crash-landed among the cultists, sending them scurrying for cover.
Aremiel!
Helen's yell rose above the din as she danced among the large figures, the white slashes of her seraph blade lighting up the night. Alec jumped to the side and avoided a swooping demon, its talons nearly raking his shoulder. He skidded on his back and pierced its wing with another arrow, sending it crashing to the ground. He checked the others.
Aline, look out!
Aline was back up, darting between two Shinigami. Cutting them up with her seraph blades, another demon was diving toward her. Helen tackled Aline to safety at the very last second. The demon missed them and went past, then turned for a second charge. It bared its fangs, each as long as a human hand. Helen rose to her feet, clutching her hurt shoulder. She dropped to her knees as the monster leaped, jamming her seraph blade upward, slicing the demon from its navel to its neck.
By the angel, Aline shouted. That was amazing!
Helen beamed, but not for long. No sooner had she finished the kill than another demon landed in front of her and swung a taloned wing at her face. This time Aline was there and sliced the wing at the joint, completely severing it. Helen followed with a spinning slash that lopped off its head. Alec turned his attention to another diving Shinigami and managed to avoid getting cut in half by a sharp wing. He tracked its trajectory as it passed and shot it in the back. The demon crashed at the base of the amphitheater.
Alec!
Aline shouted.
The stage!
Alec whirled, just as a massive column of light descended from the whirling vortex and struck a massive glowing pentagram of flowers that surrounded the stage. The entire amphitheater was illuminated. Magnus was a silhouette, bathed in scorching, brilliant light. Alec could only just make out his eyes. They were fixed on Alec. Magnus's mouth moved, as if he wanted to say something. Then Magnus and Xin Yun disappeared. The scorching dazzle of the light filled the moonflower pentagram, erasing everything inside. Alec's heart lurched. He ran for the stage only to be cut off by a cultist looming up in his path. He cut him down with a blow and looked into the startled face of the next man. He spoke quietly, but loud enough for all of them to hear. If you value your life, Alec said, run now. The nearest cultists scattered. It cleared a space for Alec to cut a path to the pentagram. His head buzzing with panic, he flung himself toward it and slammed into an invisible barrier as hard as a granite wall. There was a skinny man with a tuft of a beard standing in front of the cultists beside the pentagram as if he was their leader. Alec had never seen him before.
Where is Magnus? Alec demanded.
Who are you? Asked the bearded man.
We are shadow hunters, said Helen, striding to flank Alec.
Aline slid into position at his other side.
And you are all in a lot of trouble. What's going on here? Who are you?
I am Bernard, the leader of this cult.
Somebody behind the cult leader said,
We agreed to betraying the great poison and the cursed daughter. Nobody agreed to you leading us, Bernard.
Bernard went purple above his white robes.
Who is the great poison?
Aline inquired.
Our founder, Magnus Bane, answered Bernard.
Helen sucked in her breath.
However, we broke away from his teachings of caring for the children and pranking the rich many years ago, Bernard asserted. Since his departure, we have had a much more wickedness-based agenda. A few of us do murders, lately a lot of murders. Mostly we're evil, but laid back about it.
So Magnus is innocent,
kind of, Aline said.
Helen looked disconcerted. Alec didn't care about any of it. He shoved past Bernard, took a deep, ragged breath, and drew a seraph blade from his belt.
Raguel! It burst into angelic light.
Using a seraph blade on a mundane was a horrible thing. His father had told him no true shadow hunter would dream of doing it. Before anyone could move to stop him, Alec swung the tip of the glowing seraph blade so close to Bernard's throat that the collar of his white shirt began to blacken and smoke.
Where is Magnus? Alec demanded. I will not ask again.
Bernard's eyes went white. His lips parted, and a voice that was clearly not his issued from his throat. It rumbled and crackled like a bonfire. A demon's voice. The voice of a prince of hell.
The great poison? Why, he's right here.
Bernard waved jerkily to the pentagram, awash in awful light. In its fiery heart, the palest of shadows began to resolve. Alec was able, more and more clearly every moment, to make out shapes.
Find him, said the demon within Bernard, if you can.
The scene inside the pentagram clarified. Alec's mouth went dry with horror. He could see Magnus. He could see more than one Magnus.
One of these pairs of biters is the real Magnus Bane and the real Xin Yun Zheng. Consider it a test, little shadow hunter. If you recognize him, you can save him.
Alec had his bow and blade in his hands, every muscle straining. He was ready to fight, frantic to rescue Magnus. And he was locked in place with terror. 100 Magnus Banes were fighting for their lives against 100 Xin Yun Zhengs. All were identical. 100 Magnus Banes in white robes stabbed at another 100 Xin Yuns, and any one of them could have been the real Magnus. The one on the ground, awaiting the killing blow, might have been the real Magnus, desperately needing Alec's help. Or the one winning the fight could be the true Magnus, only for Alec to kill him by trying to help him.
An ingenious bit of magic, if I do say so, the demon said through Bernard. Clever, but at the same time very cruel, for it does offer you hope. All you need to do is recognize the true Magnus Bane. Isn't that always the way it is in fairy tales? The prince can tell his true love even when she is transformed. A swan among other swans. A pebble on a beach of sand.
Bernard chuckled.
If only the world were a fairy tale, Nephilim.
Chapter 28, The Prince of Fools. There was a quiet terror inside the pentagram, and chaos without. Then there was light. The light seemed to switch off the rest of the world. Everything outside the pentagram, including Alec, was gone. There was only his father. A man in a white suit floated in the darkness of the funnel, looking down at Magnus and Xin Yun. He wore a crown of barbed wire on his head and matching dull silver cufflinks. He descended to the ground gracefully, like water sliding downstream over a bed of pebbles. Asmodeus wore just a hint of a smirk, showing off his jagged, hungry teeth. He looked at Xin Yun, and then at Magnus.
You've brought me a gift.
Father, said Xin Yun.
She sounded almost like a child. Magnus swallowed down terror and hate and carelessly flicked a lock of hair off his forehead.
Hi, Dad.
Asmodeus's eyes and his hungry half-smile were fixed on Magnus. Magnus saw the exact moment the truth hit Xin Yun. One second she was completely still, the next her body shook as if she had just been electrocuted. She turned slowly to look at Magnus.
No,
she moaned, her voice barely a whisper.
You can't be his son. Not his real son. No.
Magnus grimaced. Unfortunately, yes.
I did tell you, my dear, that this was going to be a family gathering.
Asmodeus' smile grew as he soaked in her pain. He licked his lips as if relishing the taste.
It's just not yours.
Asmodeus had been playing with her, fooling her as easily as Magnus had tricked the cultists of the Crimson Hand long ago. Shinyun kept looking at one of them, then the other, and looking away as if the sight burned her eyes. Magnus wondered if she could see the resemblance. She was breathing hard and erratically. At last, her eyes fixed on Magnus.
You get everything,
Shinyun whispered.
You've taken everything from me.
What a good idea, said Asmodeus. Why don't you do that, son? Take back the cult you made. Take the place she dreamed of. At my right hand.
Shinyun screamed.
No!
Her burning eyes filled. Her tears fell even as she pounced. Magnus dodged the swing of her sword, stumbling under her onslaught. She swung again, and Magnus hit the ground, rolling to avoid the blow. There was dust in his eyes. He could see no way he could escape steel and death for long. No third blow came. Magnus looked up, then scrambled cautiously to his feet. Shinyun was frozen mid-lunge, as if she were about to fall over. Magnus looked into her eyes. They were frantic, darting side to side. Her body was as frozen now as her face had always been. Only her eyes were alive. Magnus looked at Asmodeus, who spread out his hands with the flourish Magnus recognized. He had made the same gesture many times himself when performing a feat of magic. Now, this I don't understand, Magnus said. You've had your fun. You performed your signature move, made your offer, caused as much pain and fury as you possibly could. Why stop her? Why not let this play out? Not that I'm keen to be turned into a shish kebab by an enraged cultist, but I don't get your angle.
I want to talk to my son, said Asmodeus. It has been almost 2 centuries since we last spoke, Magnus. You don't write, you don't call, you don't make sacrifices on my altar. It wounds your fond parent.
He moved, grinning like a skull, to give Magnus a fatherly pat on the shoulder. Magnus threw up an arm to shove him back. His arm went straight through Asmodeus. You're not actually here. Asmodeus's grotesque grin grew impossibly wider.
Not yet. Not until I take away someone's immortality and use it as my anchor to this world.
My immortality, said Magnus. Asmodeus waved a hand at Shinyun.
Oh, no. Hers will do.
His hand was smooth and pale, the fingers ending in claws. Magnus saw Shinyun's eyes, the only moving part of her, filled with fresh, humiliated tears. So I am to be spared, said Magnus. How splendid for me. May I ask why? I presume it is not overflowing paternal affection. You can't feel that. A plush high-backed chair appeared, and Asmodeus sat down in it. He looked Magnus over.
The angels have children,
Asmodeus told Magnus, his voice a horrific parody of a father telling a child a bedtime story.
They are said to be the greatest blessings this world has, the Nephilim, destroyers of demons. And we, princes of hell, have our children too. Many of our children burn into ash and void, unable to bear what they are, but there are those who survive. They are meant for thrones of iron. The tales say they are made to be the greatest curses of the world.
Magnus could scarcely breathe. It felt as if the air was burning away.
I have had many children in this world,
Asmodeus said.
Almost all have disappointed me. A few have proved useful for a little while, but they were hardly worth the trouble. Their powers were extinguished, or their minds broke after a century, two at the most. The children of greater demons can be very powerful, but they are seldom stable. I waited for a long time for a true child to be a curse upon this world, and eventually I gave up. My children have been unable to thrive in this world, or any other. Weak lights begging to be put out, not worthy of me. But you, you're strong. You fight. You sought me out with a scream that could have torn a world apart. You speak, and the blood of angels listens. You have cut doorways through the worlds. You have performed feats you did not realize were impossible, and continued merrymaking on your way. I've been watching you a long time now. Demons can feel pride. We are rather good at it. My son, I am proud of you. A hollow space in the center of Magnus's chest hurt. Long ago, it would have meant something to him to hear that. How touching, he said at last. What do you want? I really don't think it's a hug.
I want you, said Asmodeus. You are my most powerful child, and therefore my favorite. I want your power in my service. After all I've done for you, I want your loyalty.
Magnus started to laugh. Asmodeus opened his mouth to speak again, but Magnus held up a hand to silence him.
That's a good one, he said, wiping away tears.
When have you ever done anything for me? In one breath, Asmodeus moved from sitting in the chair to standing next to Magnus. His whisper in Magnus's ear was like the hissing of a furnace.
What did I say?
Asmodeus asked his son.
Time to remember everything.
He pressed his clawed hand to Magnus's face. Magnus's eyes blurred, and his mind recoiled at the intrusion as the world changed in a blink. One moment he was standing on the stage in the center of the pentagram, the next he could feel the sting of the burning sun prickling his skin. Sweat began to bead at his brow. He took a step backward and felt sand crunch under his shoes. He smelled the scent of the ocean and heard the sounds of waves crashing against the shore. Magnus knew exactly where and when he was now, and it filled him with dread. He was on the sandy beach at the edge of a jungle. It was lifetimes ago, from the very start of his first lifetime, in the first and last place he had ever called home. Magnus became suddenly keenly aware of how small he was. His shirt hung loosely from his narrow shoulders, his thin limbs lost beneath the material. His body had been adult and unchanging for centuries. He had forgotten how it felt to be weak and frail, to be so terrifyingly vulnerable. Clear in the hot air, he heard a man's low, gravelly voice.
Come here, my boy.
The language was an old Malay dialect, one that had fallen into disuse centuries ago. Magnus hadn't heard or spoken it since he was a child. His stepfather walked out of the jungle and struck the trembling boy who would be Magnus, sending him sprawling into the sand. Magnus shook under his father's blows. All the memories he had of his stepfather he'd worked so hard to forget flooded back, one with every pang of pain. He could taste the sand in his mouth and feel the damp clothes sticking to his body. He could feel all the terror of those days and all the rage. He balled his hands into fists, desperate to do something, anything. He could feel his stepfather's rough fingers wrap around his bicep and pull him to his feet. He was dragged through the sand and into the trees to the mouth of the old barn. This was the past. His past. Magnus knew exactly what would happen next, and the fear he felt now was worse than the first time. The barn where his mother had hanged herself was a charred tomb. There were gaping holes in the roof. One of the walls had collapsed under the pressure of encroaching tree limbs, and weeds seethed from between the floorboards. In the dark, there still hung a cut rope. A narrow creek ran across one corner of the ground in the barn, shadowed by the remains of the roof. There was a low table bearing a cup of incense sticks and two offering bowls and a rough sketch on stone of a woman. Magnus looked at the picture and remembered his mother's sorrowful eyes. Magnus as a child looked up at his stepfather and saw him weeping. Magnus could feel the boy's shame for hating him, the boy's desire to love him. The adult watching part of Magnus knew what came next. His stepfather put his arm around the boy's shoulder and led him to the creek. The boy felt the stiffness of his stepfather's fingers, as if the man were willing himself to keep from shaking. Then Magnus felt rough hands close around his neck as the man grabbed the boy and pushed him into the water. Cold swallowed him, and it became impossible to breathe. His lungs spasmed desperately as he choked in gulps of water. The boy, fists pounding the water, struggled but could not escape his stepfather's grip. Then there was a twist in the air, like the snap of twigs when something moved in the jungle. There was the first stirring of magic. The boy was somehow able to twist away from the stepfather's strong grasp. Magnus coughed and choked, clawing long, wet hair out of his eyes and gasped out painfully, "I'm sorry. I will be good. I tried to be good." "This is the only way for you to be good," his stepfather shouted. Magnus screamed. His stepfather's hands closed around his neck once more, his grip unyielding, his breath panting in Magnus's ears. There was an awful gentleness in the finality of his voice.
"This will make you pure,"
whispered the only father he had ever known.
"Trust me."
He plunged the boy's head back underwater, this time so deep it smashed into the stony bed of the creek. Magnus felt the numbing pain, felt his knees weaken as the boy began to lose consciousness and sink toward death. Magnus was drowning, but at the same time he was terribly distant, watching a small boy die. As he watched, he saw a shadow move over the water. A whisper flooded the boy's head, colder than the water in his lungs.
"Here are the words that will free you. Speak them, and trade his life for yours. Only one of you can survive this. Take hold of your power or die."
In that moment, it was an easy decision. Calm swept over the boy, and the spell flowed out of his mouth into the water. His hands, flailing in panic, stilled and then made a series of complex gestures. He could not breathe, but he could do this magic. Magnus had never been able to work out how he had done the spell that killed his father. Now he knew. The boy burst into a column of blue flame, so hot it brought the water in the creek to a boil. The fire crawled hungrily up his stepfather's arms and consumed him. His stepfather's screams echoed through the dark barn where his mother had died. Magnus found himself standing across from the boy and saw his younger self looking back at him. His shirt was charred black, and smoke was still drifting off his body. For a moment, he thought the child could see him. Then he realized the boy was staring at the charred remains of his stepfather.
"I never wanted any of this to happen,"
Magnus whispered, to all his old shadows and ghosts, to his mother and his stepfather and the lost, wounded child he had been.
"But you did," said Asmodeus. "You wanted to live."
His father was standing beside the boy Magnus had been, looking at Magnus across the smoke.
"Go now," he murmured to the boy Magnus. "You did well. Go and make yourself worthy. I may come back to claim you one day."
Magnus blinked away the smoke and found himself in the center of the stage of the amphitheater under a dark sky. The ground felt unsteady beneath his feet, but that was because he was shaking. Only a few seconds had passed. Xinyan was still frozen, her eyes fixed on him with a desperate intensity. Outside the pentagram, the blank blackness was starting to fade into gray. Magnus could nearly make out the outlines of people watching him. Asmodeus was standing beside him, hand curved around Magnus's shoulder in what almost felt like an embrace.
"You see now," he said. "I saved you. You chose me. You are my favorite child. Because I forged you in that pyre, I have come back for you, as I said I would. Across all the worlds, there is nobody who will accept you and understand you. There is only me. All you could ever be is mine."
A knife appeared in Magnus's hand, its cold weight heavy. His father's voice was low and crackling with hellfire.
"Take the blade. Draw Xinyan's blood. Sacrifice her so I can cross the world to you. I have seen all your struggles and been proud of all your rebellions. My kind has always responded to a rebel. Every pain you have suffered has had a purpose, has made you strong, has led you to this moment. You have made me so proud, my child, my eldest curse. Nothing pleases me more than to lift my worthy son up to a high place and lay all the kingdoms of the world before him."
Magnus could almost feel his father's hand on his shoulder. The faint heat of Asmodeus's other hand was on Magnus's wrist, as if Asmodeus would guide the blade straight into Xinyan's heart, as he had led Magnus to kill his stepfather so long ago. Magnus had made a choice back then. Maybe it had been the right choice. "You see," Magnus said, "the thing is, I don't want the world. The world's a mess. I can't even keep my apartment organized. I'm still cleaning glitter out of the lampshades after my cat's birthday party, and that was months ago." Despite the heat and pressure of Asmodeus's hand, Magnus lowered the knife. He was grown now, worlds and lives away from that terrified child. He did not need to be told what to choose. He could choose for himself. Asmodeus began to laugh. The world shook.
"Is this about that boy?"
Magnus had thought he could not feel more afraid, until he realized he had unwittingly called Asmodeus's attention to Alec. "My love life is none of your business, father," Magnus said with as much dignity as he could. He knew Asmodeus could feel how deathly afraid he was. Magnus simply would not give him the satisfaction of admitting it.
"I find it very amusing that you have tangled up one of the Nephilim in your net," said Asmodeus. "Nothing is more fun than a challenge, and what else is it? To corrupt the purest of the pure. The Nephilim burn with such righteous fury. I see the temptation to cast a shadow over all that light. Even the Nephilim are amenable to lures, the sins of the flesh, and all the raging delights of jealousy, lust, and despair. Sometimes, especially the Nephilim, the higher they are, the more completely shattered when they fall. I applaud you, my son."
"That's not how it is," Magnus said. "I love him."
"Do you?" Asmodeus asked. "Or is that something you just tell yourself, so you can do what you want, the way you did when you burned your stepfather alive? Demons cannot love. You said that yourself. Everything you are is half mine. Surely that means you inherited only half a heart."
Magnus turned his face away. Long ago, the Silent Brothers had told him warlocks had souls. He had always chosen to believe it.
"Everything I am," said Magnus, "is all mine." "And does he love you?"
asked Asmodeus, and laughed again. His voice was a mimicry of Katarina's. calling back her voice, asking the same question, telling Magnus that there was no love that he could hold sacred and safe away from Asmodeus.
He could never love something like you, Asmodeus pursued. A life with magic from hell and burning everything you touch, he may want you now. But you never told him about me, did you?
Asmodeus smiled.
Which was wise of you. If he did know, I'd have to kill him. Can't have one of the Nephilim knowing about my eldest curse.
He doesn't know, Magnus said through his teeth, and stop calling me that.
You knew telling him might endanger your warlock friends, said Asmodeus,
and Magnus knew with some despair that Asmodeus was flipping through his memories like a card deck.
But you were glad for the excuse, weren't you? You feared if Alexander Lightwood knew about your kinship to me, he would turn away in disgust. You know he still will. He will come to hate and resent you for your immortality as he withers away. He was born to righteousness, and you were born to night everlasting. Your corruption will eat away at him. He will not be able to bear you long, being what you are. It will destroy him, or he will destroy you.
Asmodeus's voice was no longer fire and smoke. It was drops of cold water into an ocean of despair. It was nothing Magnus had not told himself. He looked down at the knife. The emblem on the handle and guard, an insect with spread wings, marked its master. He looked over at Xin Yun, whose eyes were glued to the point of the blade. Sweat poured down her face even as she was frozen in place.
You understand. You have always known it would not last.
Asmodeus's breath stirred Magnus's hair.
Nothing will ever last for you, except me. Without me, you will be truly alone.
Magnus bowed his head. He remembered stumbling through scorching hot sand, filled with despair and smelling smoke from the ashes of his whole life. There had been a time when he had been so desperate, he did not know what his answer to Asmodeus would have been. He knew now. Magnus turned and walked away from his father and threw the knife down in the dirt. I'm not alone. But even if I was, my answer would be the same. I understand what faith is, said Magnus. I know who I am, and I know who I love. My answer to you is no. Asmodeus shrugged.
So be it. Remember, when you die, that I tried to give you this chance. I wanted you. But I am more than happy to adopt.
Asmodeus lazily waved a hand, and Xin Yun fell to the ground, gasping. Her hand was still closed tight upon the sword hilt. Magnus did not know how much she had seen or absorbed. Xin Yun, finally able to move, climbed to her feet. She looked up at Asmodeus, then at Magnus, and then back at the blade.
Xin Yun, my daughter, said Asmodeus. You have been chosen. Embrace your glorious destiny.
Her unreadable face was tipped up to his. She walked toward him, his most faithful worshiper.
All right, said Xin Yun,
and drove her sword into Asmodeus's side. Asmodeus's bright form blurred until he was only a shimmer in the air, then resolved into shape farther away, a shining image above them both.
Treachery amuses me, he said. I forgive you. I understand your rage. I know your pain. This is all you are. I know how deep your loneliness has always been. Seize this opportunity. End Magnus's life, and you will have all that you wished for. A father, legions of demons at your command, and a world to rule.
Xin Yun's head turned toward Magnus. Her shoulders slumped, then bunched, muscles gathering with new resolve. She hurled herself at him, sword in hand, and knocked him to the ground. Her tears fell hot on Magnus's face. She hit him with her free hand. Again and again, she hefted the sword. Then she hesitated.
"Don't," Magnus choked out, through a mouthful of blood. "I have to,"
Xin Yun raged.
"I need him. I'm nothing without him."
Magnus said,
"You can be something more than this."
Xin Yun shook her head. There was nothing in her eyes but despair. Magnus scrabbled in the dirt for the knife he'd thrown away, touched the hilt with his fingertips, then drew in a deep breath and sighed.
He let the knife go.
Xin Yun lifted the blade in both hands, held it above Magnus's heart, and brought it down. Chapter 29 The Fool's Night. Alec looked desperately at the vision within the pentagram. He stared at every Xin Yun, and everyone looked the same. He searched the face of every Magnus, and they were all Magnus. Magnus swinging a blade, Magnus gasping on his knees, Magnus with his hands held high, Magnus with Xin Yun on his chest, her sword held high for a killing blow.
"Joke's on you, Shadow Hunter," said Bernard, speaking with his own voice now.
There was a ripple of laughter from the members of the Crimson Hand around him. Helen swung toward them, Seraph blade shining in her hand and tears shining on her cheeks.
"She's crying for me," Alec thought with distant surprise. "For me."
"Shut up,"
she hissed. Their laughter died.
"I just think it's really funny," said Bernard. "He came here thinking he was a hero, determined to bring down the enemy, but he can't even find the enemy. He doesn't know which one she is."
Alec strung his bow, held it steady, and took aim. "I don't have to," he said. "I know which one he is."
Through the shining light of the pentagram, he let his arrow fly. Chapter 30 The Aftermath of Glory. Magnus waited for a blow that never came. With a sudden scream, Xin Yun jerked back, an arrow embedded in her arm. A familiar arrow.
"Alec!"
With a cry, Magnus wrenched himself free. He rolled across the dirt, scrambled up on one knee. Another arrow passed over his head and toward Xin Yun. He dove for the shadowy form he could dimly perceive through the shimmer of the pentagram and thrust his hand through the magical barrier into the light. Being able to put his fingertips outside the edge of the pentagram had turned out to be useful after all. Magnus felt a hand seize his, Alec's hand, clasping his as Alec had twice before, in cold water, on the edge of a cliff, and now in a pentagram with the greater demon who was Magnus's greatest fear.
"Take my strength," Alec had told him once,
and Magnus, who had always had to be strong enough on his own, had been amazed. Power flowed into Magnus as once again Alec gave him his strength. Magic returned, warm and bright, terrifying and transformative. Energy sang through his veins. The eerie light of the pentagram began to change. Magnus released Alec's hand and turned to face his father.
"No,"
Asmodeus called out, as though by his command he could reverse what Magnus had done.
"Magnus, wait."
Power exploded from Magnus. Love and magic and angelic power all fused together, and the barriers of the pentagram shattered. The world around them returned, a chaos of fallen cultists and demons. But Asmodeus could not. Even as his projection into the mortal world faded away into shadow, the greater demon Asmodeus, ruler of Edom and prince of hell, raised his arm, and a deep blackness began to expand from the pentagram's center, drawing in the light. The blanket of swirling clouds overhead cracked, and the vortex pulsed and wavered. It began to lose its form, and blinding white and midnight black light burst from the fissures in the sky.
The earth buckled beneath their feet, and a black pit opened at the former pentagram's center, its hungry mouth sucking everything toward its abyss. Magnus began to slide as the wooden platform crumbled beneath his feet like earth. Magnus fell to his knees. The pull grew in intensity, tearing at every cell in his body. His nerves screamed, and he found himself clutching at the warped boards of the stage like a lifeline. Next to him, Xin Yun was doing the same. She cried out as the force of the whirlwind lifted her feet off the ground.
Magnus, grab my hand!
Magnus could hear Alec's voice through the falling barriers and hiss of dying light. He lifted his head, searching for him. The ground beneath Magnus was crumbling away. Xin Yun grabbed for him and screamed, her fingers clawed in his blood-stained jacket as they both began to tumble into darkness. They came to a jerking stop, dangling in midair. Alec's hand had closed around Magnus's wrist. Somehow he had lunged across the destroyed pentagram and the shattered stage. He was stretched out, half his body dangling over the edge of the abyss. He tried to pull Magnus up, but the weight of Magnus and Xin Yun was too great. He slid forward, gripping the edge of the abyss with one desperate hand. Fear clutched at Magnus. Xin Yun was still holding on to them. They might all fall together.
"Let go," he shouted at Alec. "Let me fall."
Alec's eyes went wide. His fingers held Magnus's wrist even tighter. There was a swirl of movement behind Alec. The two Shadow Hunter girls who had fought beside Alec appeared at the edge of the abyss. One reached down and grabbed hold of Alec, hauling him up. The other grabbed for Magnus. The abyss howled in despair as Magnus and Xin Yun tore free of its pull and tumbled, along with Alec, onto the charred ground. Then it vanished. In the strange silence that followed, the two girls ran to seize hold of Xin Yun and tie her wrists behind her. Xin Yun made no move to resist. Magnus rolled to a sitting position, gasping, and realized he was still gripping Alec's hand. He was still holding Alec, or more precisely, Alec was still holding him. Alec was filthy, covered in dirt, with blood on his face and a wild look in his blue eyes. Magnus was vaguely aware that people were still running around in the distance somewhere and that Xin Yun was being led away, but he could only see Alec. Alec, who had come here to save him.
"Alexander," Magnus whispered, "I told you not to hold on."
Suddenly, Alec's arms were around him, crushingly hard. Magnus swallowed a breath that wanted to be a sob, and buried his face in the curve of Alec's neck and shoulder. Magnus's hands ran up Alec's back and shoulders, touched the softness of the back of his neck, his dark hair, feeding on the reassurance that he was alive and well and real.
Alec pulled him even closer. Into Magnus's ear, he whispered, "I would never let you go."
They had exactly 3 seconds to bask in the relief of reunion. The fallout from a failed ritual of this magnitude was spectacular on many levels. The ritual's last gasp was a sudden, violent expulsion of magical energy, a thunderous crack followed by an explosion that blew a mushroom cloud of smoke and dust into the air. Magnus wrapped his arms around Alec, casting a hasty spell to protect them both from flying wreckage. When the explosion had finally ended, Magnus warily lowered his magical shields. He was still sitting with his arms and legs wrapped around Alec, who was blinking and glancing around.
"Stop telling me to let you go," said Alec. "I will never listen. I want to be with you. I never wanted anything more in my life. If you fall, I want to fall with you."
"Stay with me," Magnus said, taking Alec's face in his hands.
The fires, burning around them, reflected in Alec's eyes, became stars.
"I love being with you. I love everything about you, Alexander."
Magnus drew Alec into a kiss and felt Alec soften against him, his tightly knotted muscles relaxing. Alec tasted like heat and dirt and blood and heaven. Magnus felt the butterfly soft brush of Alec's lashes against his own cheek,
as Alec's eyes fell shut again.
"Guys," said a woman's voice, "I'm happy for your reunion, but there's still cultists all over this place. Let's go."
Magnus looked up at the dark-haired woman, one of the Shadowhunter girls who had helped Alec. Gia Penhallow's daughter, he realized. Then he looked around at the devastation surrounding them on all sides. The air was still alive with magic, and part of the villa had caught fire. But the danger seemed to have passed. Most of the Crimson Hand cult members had fled. The rest were in the process of fleeing or were on the ground, wounded. A few of the more fanatical and stupid ones were trying to rally the rest to take control of the situation.
"You're totally right," said Magnus to the Penhallow girl. "This is not the time for love. This is the time for leaving immediately."
He and Alec scrambled to their feet and made their way beside Aline to the front of the villa. The area seemed to be free of demons and cultists, at least for now. Helen was already there and had bound Xinyan's wrists to a broken marble pillar. Xinyan was silent, her head bowed. Magnus did not know whether she was physically hurt or only despondent. The two Shadowhunter women were deep in a whispered conversation. He studied them both, suddenly recognizing the golden-haired one from council sessions.
"You're Helen Blackthorne, from the Los Angeles Institute, right?"
Looking startled, Helen nodded. Magnus turned to the smaller woman. "And you must be Gia's daughter."
"Irene?"
"Aline,"
blurted Aline, her eyes wide.
"I didn't think you knew my name. I mean, you were close enough. I saw you and Alec from a distance, at the guard. I'm a big fan."
"Always a pleasure to meet a fan," said Magnus.
"You're the image of your mother."
He and Gia occasionally made cutting remarks about various clave members to each other in Mandarin. She was a nice lady. Alec nodded to Aline and Helen.
"I couldn't have gotten to you without them."
"Thank you both," said Magnus, "for coming to rescue me."
The golden-haired girl with the fey ears and the blackthorn eyes twitched.
"I didn't come to rescue you," Helen confessed. "I was planning on bringing you in for questioning. I mean, before. Not now, obviously."
"Well," said Magnus, "that worked out pretty well for me. Thanks anyway."
"There's about a 0% chance the Shadowhunters at the Rome Institute aren't going to notice a gladiatorial ring going supernova in the hills," said Aline. She leaned against the crumbling marble wall and looked cheerfully up at Helen. "Congratulations, Blackthorne. You get to call for reinforcements at last."
Helen did not smile back at Aline. She scribbled a fire message and sent it on its way, her face very pale.
"What are we going to tell the other Shadowhunters?" Aline asked. "I still have no idea what happened in the pentagram."
Magnus began to talk his way through an abbreviated version of the night's events, leaving out only the detail of Asmodeus being his father. He knew he should tell them, and yet his father's words echoed in his head.
"If he did know, I'd have to kill him. Can't have one of the Nephilim knowing about my eldest curse."
Asmodeus was gone, but he wasn't dead. Magnus hated obeying his father. But he would not do anything that meant he might lose Alec. Not now. Xinyan's bowed head lifted as Magnus spoke, and he saw her eyes narrow in her still face as she realized what he was leaving out. She could tear Magnus's last facade apart, he knew. She could tell these Nephilim the whole truth right now. Magnus bit his lip, tasting blood and fear. Xinyan said nothing. She did not even open her mouth. Her eyes seemed to be fixed on the distance, as if the real Xinyan were far away.
"Xinyan did try to stop the greater demon in the end," Magnus said, almost against his will.
"And then she tried to kill you," pointed out Alec.
"She didn't have a choice," said Magnus.
"She had the same choice as you."
"She's lost," said Magnus. "She's desperate. I was once all those things, too."
Alec's tone was grave.
"Magnus,
we can ask the clave to show leniency to her, but that's all we can do, after everything she's done. You know it is."
Magnus remembered his father's voice talking about the children of the angel, born to righteousness.
Maybe he had only wished for mercy for Shin Yun because he was so flawed himself. Maybe it was because she was keeping his secret for now.
Yes, said Magnus. I know.
Why are we even having this discussion?
Helen raised her voice, and as she did so, her voice cracked.
The whole Rome Institute is on its way by now. We all know that the Clave will have her executed.
It was the first thing Helen had said in some time, and her voice shook. Aline studied her with some concern. Magnus did not know Helen well, but he was entirely certain it was not Shin Yun's fate that had upset Helen so badly.
What's wrong?
Said Aline.
I was trying so hard to do the right thing. But I got it all wrong. If it hadn't been for you and Alec, I wouldn't have come, and innocence would have died,
Helen replied in a curt voice.
That isn't the kind of shadow hunter I want to be.
Helen, you made a mistake, Alec said. The Clave tells us not to trust downworlders. Despite the accords, despite everything, we all get indoctrinated, and we...
He broke off, looking up at the clear, cold stars.
I used to follow the rules because I thought it would keep everyone I cared about safe, he said. But I've started to realize that everyone I care about is a bigger group, and a different group than the Clave was built to accept.
So what are you suggesting we do?
Helen whispered.
We change the Clave, said Alec. From inside, we make new laws, better ones.
Institute heads can suggest new laws, said Aline.
Your mother...
I want to do this myself, said Alec. And I want more than to be head of an institute. I've realized I don't need to change. And neither do you, Helen, or you, Aline. It's the world that needs to change. And we're going to be the ones to change it.
The Shadow Hunters are here,
Shin Yun croaked unexpectedly. They looked at her.
Look.
She was right. The Shadow Hunters of the Rome Institute had arrived. They spilled through the gates, gaping around at the burning villa, the charred ground, and the cultists, some lying wounded on the ground, some ranging around in their white suits. The moment the cultists caught sight of the Shadow Hunters, they began to run. The Shadow Hunters gave chase, bone weary and exhausted. Magnus slumped against the wall of the villa and observed the shenanigans. He couldn't help noticing that Shin Yun was watching them, too. She had shrunk back against the pillar, but was still silent. The Clave would kill her. The spiral labyrinth would not be inclined to treat her more kindly than the Nephilim. There wouldn't be a lot of sympathy for a warlock who had murdered innocents and nearly summoned a greater demon prince into the world. Magnus could understand all that. And yet he was sorry. Alec squeezed his hand. A dark-haired shadow hunter stalked toward their small group and began jabbering at Helen in Italian. Magnus gathered that she was Chiara Malatesta, head of the Rome Institute, and that she was both confused and annoyed. Eventually Magnus broke into the conversation.
Helen is very brave, he said. She knew she could not delay if the ritual were to be stopped.
I owe my life to her and to Aline Penhollow.
Hey, said Alec, but he was smiling. Magnus kissed his cheek. Chiara Malatesta raised her eyebrows, then shrugged. Italians had a philosophical view of love.
Warlock, she said in perfect English. I recall you from some council meetings, I believe. Quite a few of the cultists are wounded. Can you help us heal them?
Magnus sighed and rolled up the sleeves of his abominable, hopelessly ruined white robe.
This is partly my mess, he said. Time to clean it up.
Helen and Aline agreed to join Signora Malatesta and the others as they swept the grounds for stray cultists and demonic activity. Alec remained to watch Shin Yun and, Magnus hoped, rest a little. Dust hung thick in the air, turning the fiery explosions in the sky into hazy brightness as Magnus walked across shards of stone. Every time he found a wounded cult member, he thought of how Alec had come for him and healed them as if he were Katarina. Eventually, he saw more shadow hunters emerging from the smoke and fire. He tried to think of Alec and not of what would happen to Shin Yun.
Oh, hello, said a Shadow Hunter boy, coming to an abrupt stop beside him. Magnus Bane, I've never gotten a good look at you.